Okay, so I want to talk tonight about self-compassion and what it is, how we practice it. And specifically, I want to, well, actually, truthfully, I think I'm going to spend most of tonight talking about how we understand self-compassion and how we practice just with general self-compassion. But I wanted to make a particular point that there are two kinds of self-compassion, and they're both really essential. And sometimes we find we're more willing to practice in one way or the other, but we really need both. And we can call those tender self-compassion and fierce self-compassion, or a more kind of quiet, nurturing, inward self-compassion. And a type of self-compassion that takes action. And sometimes that means taking action with our own minds, but often it really also means taking action in the world, setting boundaries, being brave and courageous, having strength and perseverance and patience, all the different ways in which we need to firmly exercise self-compassion as we move through the world. So I'm going to talk about both of those, but like I said, I think we'll be mostly just talking generally about self-compassion, because I realized when I was working on this talk that it's sort of like wanting to talk about the two fins on a fish without talking about the fish first. It makes no sense. So I'm going to talk about the fish for a long time, and then towards the later part of the talk about these two fins on the fish. So I want to talk about why I am so interested in this topic. I actually am trained as a Dharma teacher, but I'm also trained as a mindful self-compassion teacher. And some of you have heard this story or parts of this story before, but I started practicing mindfulness in 1991, and I practiced for about 10 years, primarily mindfulness. I went on mindfulness retreats, and as some of you may recall, the mindfulness retreats in the 90s were really mindfulness retreats. The early 90s, I feel like it was the whole 90s, but maybe I'm remembering wrong, but certainly the early 90s, there was no yoga, there was no metta. It was, 16 hours a day of mindfulness practice on retreat. And that was fine for me because I was really happy to be learning a way to be alert and present in the world without being at the mercy of my thoughts. And that's one of the things that mindfulness does, is it teaches us that we can be right here, alive and well in the world, and not be completely fused with our thoughts. We can be in a whole different place in the brain, which is literally true in terms of MRI scans of what happens when we practice mindfulness. We move out of the default mode network and into the prefrontal cortex. So we can be out of the identification with thought and rather in the refuge of just now, the present moment. What's happening right now. And sometimes it isn't a refuge. Sometimes the present moment is hard. But often the present moment is pretty neutral, and the hard place is the thinking mind. And so that was the case for me. So 10 years of just practicing mindfulness was great. And then in the early 2000s, I went on a loving kindness retreat. And the traditional practice for loving kindness or metta is you begin with yourself. And so we began by offering well-wishing phrases to ourselves, and I found that really, really hard. I just wasn't conditioned to offer friendliness inward. I knew how to be a helper and a caregiver, but I wasn't set up to send it into myself. I judged it as narcissistic and couldn't do it. So then my teacher invited me to really work with that, and I needed it anyway because I still had a lot of internal sort of mental emotional suffering. So I really worked hard on learning to turn that friendliness inward And I worked hard on it. I learned how to do it. I learned how to accept it. It helped me a lot in many ways. And I learned that lots of people have a hard time turning friendliness in toward themselves. And when I learned that, I worked on a whole 10-week curriculum, which I taught for about 10 years, called Metta for Self. However, in 2008 or something like that, somewhere around there, I was introduced to Kristen Neff's book, Self-Compassion. And her ideas are really powerful. And it's not just her ideas, but also her science, because she's a researcher. And so she did a lot of studies on self-compassion. And since then, she started that back in the 2010s, and then it grew exponentially. And now there's a huge body of research showing that we can really transform our well-being for the better with these practices of self-compassion. So I did the teacher training. And so it's been years for me of practicing, and I still practice every single day. I deliberately practice every single day. And that's part of what we're doing. We're deliberately working with our own neuroplasticity, what the Buddha called training our minds. And we're doing that so that we are not at the mercy of our negativity bias or our conditioning, and we can instead experience the well-being of a mind that more well, you know, with training can more reflexively offer us benevolence rather than criticism when things get hard. And that's really wonderful. But it's practice. I heard Michelle Obama, a little tiny clip of Michelle Obama on Facebook or Instagram or something, and she was talking about raising her daughter Sasha and Malia, and she said, "I always told my girls, whatever you're doing right now, that's practice for what you're going to become. It's practice for what you're becoming. You want to practice? You want to be a whiner? Go ahead and practice whining. You want to be like a hard worker? Go ahead and practice getting that work done right now. But whatever we practice, we become." So that's how she raised her kids, and that's kind of how I, as an adult, am raising myself. And I encourage you to consider this similar thing, that what we practice is what lays the foundation for what it's going to unfold in the future. How we meet this moment is a seed planting for what is going to unfold in the future. So the moment's going to arise. It's just going to arise based on whatever came before. And it could be, you know, any of a number of things. When we meet the moment with presence and compassion, we're not only creating a sort of a container for the moment that is so much more nourishing than many other options, but we're also we're practicing, we're setting some foundation for the future. And this is what's so beautiful about neuroplasticity, is this goes on, you know, our entire lives. Our brains continue the capacity for change in past 100 years old, and they've done research on that too. So I find it all very hopeful and inspiring that we can persevere, and as we learn to hold ourselves in compassion, we affect everyone around us too. So I want to invite us into a little practice. And this is a practice you can do just with me. I'll ask you some questions, and you can respond to it in any of a couple different ways. You can just reflect on the questions and see what comes up for you silently. If you have something to write with, you can write down your answers. Or if you'd like to, if you don't mind sharing, you can share it in the chat, and I can read it aloud. So any of those options as I offer an inquiry around self-compassion. Okay, let's see here. Bring my papers in front. Okay. So I invite you to think of various times in your life when you've had a close friend who was dealing with some kind of difficulty or even suffering in some way. Or maybe some physical pain, some significant loss, or any kind of difficult diagnosis. Even simple things like when people feel really bad about a failure or a mistake, or just when people are exhausted. Think about those kinds of moments with people you've known over the years. And now here is the question, the first of four questions. How do you typically respond to your friends in these types of situations? What do you say? What tone do you use? How's your posture? What nonverbal gestures do you use? It's just taking some moments to reflect, to write at home, or if you want to put something in the chat, please do. Someone's going through a difficult time. How do you typically respond? Someone you care about. Okay, we've got a couple here. Encouraging, supportive, nurturing, caring, loving, listening closely, being fully present. Often I just sit with them and listen to what they need to say, hold their hand. I used to want to fix them because I couldn't tolerate the discomfort. Yeah, understood. Now I hold space and listen. Lovely. I listen. Supportive, non-judgmental. Listen and where it seems appropriate, ask open-ended questions. Tell them that I love them and I'm there for them. It's really beautiful. Okay, so next question. Think of times when you have been going through something rough, something difficult at work. Some physical challenge, a difficult diagnosis, a failure, a loss, a challenge. How do you typically respond to yourself in these kinds of situations? What do you say? What tone do you use? How's your posture? What nonverbal gestures do you use? How do you respond to yourself during difficult times? Okay, some things people are sharing. It means I'm no good, not friendly toward myself. Turn inward in an embarrassed manner. Run away from feelings, numb with food, etc. Get scared that the feelings will overwhelm me. Learning to build window of tolerance, beautiful. Give myself time to work through it. Read from great teachers. Yeah, hey. Take a breath. It's okay. How do I skillfully move forward? Yay. This is all the direction we want to be going. For both myself and friends, I must admit I have pulls towards shutting off the pain or trying to fix it. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. We have a lot of conditioning over that in that way. Yeah. Okay, so noticing now, this is the third of these four questions. Do you notice any patterns of difference between how you respond to your friends versus yourself? Maybe you notice that you catastrophize with yourself, but you have more perspective with friends. Maybe you rush yourself along, but you slow down and have more space for friends when they're having a hard time. Or, maybe, there's any of many possibilities. Skillful and wisdom toward others need to get better at being that way with me. Yeah. Don't notice any differences. Yay. Easier to respond to a friend. Yeah. With self, I deal with me the way my parents would. Brush it aside. That's a good observation. Brush it aside and say, get over it. Changing that with this work. Yay. Notice that I'm tense with myself, have many expectations. With friends, I'm open without expectations. My confidence and self-doubt. I've learned to care for myself as much as I would with another. That's exactly what how we could define self-compassion. Treating ourselves during difficulty as we would a friend during difficulty. Yeah, great. And then the last question to consider. What do you think it would be like if you started, or if you already are in this, already doing this? What is it like? Or what do you think it would be like if you started to treat yourself more like you treat your friends? What impact could it have on your life? Kali said enlightenment. Yeah, that's, I think, what the Buddhist teaching on freedom it includes: self-friendliness, self-care, loved, calming. Yeah. Better relationships, better world. It would help me feel like I belong, that I'm welcome and loved. Yes. No more voice othering us from the inside. Present, yeah. I practice mindful self-compassion. Great. It has been a life changer, yes. Much more loving and caring and everything. That's fantastic. An alert, compassionate presence instead of a spaciness and denial. Yeah. Yeah, I think we have to do spaciness and denial when we have a voice in there that's being so harsh with us. We have to protect ourselves. Yeah, fantastic. Thank you, everybody. So you get a sense of where we're headed. This is the informal definition of self-compassion is treating ourselves as we would treat our friends. And I have quite a bit more to say, but I just wanted to make a space here if anybody wanted to make any comments about how that inquiry landed for you. Your overall experience of it. If not, that's fine, but I just wanted to make a little opening here in case anybody wants to say anything more about that practice. Can be potent. Okay. So, Owen, Phil is sharing, I can do rain on myself, not on them. Do you mean, Phil, do you mean recognize, allow, investigate, non-identify? Yeah. So RAIN is an acronym for a mindfulness and compassion practice. Recognize and allow. Something difficult arises, we can recognize it and allow it. And then investigate it, like where is it in my body? Kind of feeling it and getting closer to it rather than the conditioning we have, which is to turn away or minimize, to turn actually towards, recognize, allow, investigate. And then the N, as it was originally cultivated by a mindfulness teacher named Michelle McDonald, N stands for non-identify, which is sort of the common humanity part that I'm about to talk about with self-compassion, that whatever we're going through isn't personal to us. It's part of how it is to be human. Or N, as it's now taught by Tara Brach, can stand for nurture, where we bring in this compassion and kindness. Yeah, thank you. So the word compassion, the Buddha taught compassion as one of the wings of freedom. The other is insight or wisdom. And compassion is learning and cultivating our capacity to turn toward the reality of suffering. In the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha talks about the first truth of existence is that suffering is here with us. It's ubiquitous. No one escapes it. And we don't do ourselves any favors by denying it. We actually, the Buddha said there is suffering, folks. It's here with us. We need to recognize it because it's, as James Baldwin said, you may not cure something by seeing it, but you definitely won't cure it if you don't see it. And that's what the Buddha was saying too. We need to acknowledge the truth of suffering in ourselves and in others. So, compassion is the capacity to turn toward pain with kindness and presence. And so, therefore, self-compassion is learning and cultivating the capacity to turn toward our own difficulties with kindness and presence. And this is a really valuable thing to know how to do. Because each of us is our own primary caretaker. The Buddha said you can search the world over and find no one more deserving of your love and care than you yourself. Which doesn't mean that others are less deserving, but it also doesn't mean that you are less deserving. And if anybody's going to be tracking you, it's going to be you. You're the one who's there with you. And so, learning to be a good caretaker for yourself is a super valuable endeavor. And that's what self-compassion is, learning to really be able to be with and attend to our own difficulties skillfully. The three components of self-compassion are mindfulness, common humanity, as I was mentioning just a moment ago, and self-kindness. Or we can think of these three things, mindfulness, common humanity, and self-kindness as presence, to be present with, connection, to be in contact with connection and love. Presence, connection, and love. Mindfulness, common humanity, and self-kindness. And really, these qualities of presence, connection, and love are what we cultivate in our on our spiritual journey. Whether we're turning it outwards towards apparent others or turning it inwards toward ourselves. Presence, connection, and love are the three components of self-compassion. So I want to talk a little bit about these three components. So mindfulness brings us into the present moment where a beautiful thing happens in terms of reality. When we're here in the present moment, we are not in denial, which is really fantastic. We're with what actually is occurring in the present moment. We're seeing a thing for what it actually is. But we're also not going into some crazy storytelling about it. We're in this middle, this sweet spot in the middle where we're seeing things, but we're not elaborating on it. The word in Pali is papancha, which our minds do. They see something and then they analyze and they storytell and they go into the past and the future and they do all this stuff. But mindfulness curtails that. It's just with what is. And this is really an important capacity for being with difficulty. On the one hand, we're not protecting ourselves with denial, and that takes courage. But on the other hand, we're not making things worse than they are. We're just taking what's happening in this moment, and we're looking it square in the eye. So again, because I find it so fascinating, I want to talk one more time about, not one more time, I'll talk about it a bunch more times in the future, but one more time tonight about these two parts of the brain, the default mode network, which runs down both hemispheres of the brain, different interconnected networks, and it is primarily, it's the thinking mind, and it has its main, it's very profoundly connected to the amygdala, the limbic brain, and it really has only three things it does. It creates a sense of self, it travels into the past and future, or the imagined past and future, and it scans for problems. And it does this all day and most of the night. We think 70,000 thoughts a day. It's going constantly. Something like 70% of its thoughts are negative, and 95% of its thoughts are repetitive. And yet we're so identified, we're so, you know, as a species, we're so identified with what these, you know, this part of the brain that we evolved in order to, you know, collaborate and cooperate and communicate, and it's fabulous. And it's also got, you know, it's got challenges. That's what we're well aware. But the good news is we don't always have to live there, and we can learn that we don't have to identify with all those thoughts. We get to pick and choose which ones are helpful and which ones are not. And we get to cultivate the helpful ones, which is what we're doing with things like self-compassion. And the way we do that is by relocating ourselves into the prefrontal cortex. This happens naturally when we're focusing on a task, which is, you know, there's a kind of a refuge when we focus on a task, whether that's gardening or rock climbing or, you know, biking up a hill, or whatever it is that we do, or crossword puzzles even. There's a kind of a little refuge in these little focusing on tasks. And if we ask why, well, it's because we're getting a break from that busy, busy monkey mind. Mindfulness is also focusing on a task. We're focusing on the task of being here in the present moment. Really great because we get to like move from the identification with the thoughts into a different space. We're a compassionate witness. We're just noticing all these thoughts happening and we can be touched by it. It's like, whoa, Nelly, a lot of these are not, they hurt. A lot of these thoughts are just like, not so helpful. And I don't have to be obliged to believe them. So it's great to be able to move into this other place. And that's every time you have a mindful breath, or even just a mindful inhale or exhale, any of us do, we're putting another drop in the bucket of our capacity to move into that place. And as we cultivate that, we get more and more continuity of mindfulness, more and more availability of mindfulness throughout the day. So, mindfulness itself is a beautiful pursuit. Mindfulness mirrors what's occurring without distortion, which is fantastic in terms of managing, seeing clearly, and managing pain. And then it also supports us in having the courage to turn toward pain, others' pain, and our pain. There's a pith saying, we can't heal what we can't feel. And that's the same idea. We're not going to be able to change anything if we're not seeing it clearly. So mindfulness is the pillar on which self-compassion rests. We have to see the pain. Now, I do want to say that we can get a little, it's possible to turn toward pain and find it overwhelming. And when we do, not only did the Buddha teach a concept called wise distraction, he literally taught that sometimes it's wise to turn your mind away from something if it's getting overwhelmed, but also present-day psychologists and trauma specialists teach the same thing. So when we turn towards something that's difficult and we find ourselves getting into the overwhelm zone, then it's skillful to go take a walk or, kind of change channels in our minds. And there's even a concept in self-compassion practice called backdraft. And that concept comes from firefighting when firefighters go to put out fires and they are opening the door and then the oxygen hits the fire and the fire gets bigger. And that can happen for us emotionally too, when we turn towards something with awareness and curiosity and care, and then it can be a little overwhelming. This just happened to me recently because my mother is dealing with dementia, which is very sad and very common. And my siblings and I are just in the midst of managing this. And so I realized I needed to get support for myself. So I went to a caregiver support group. And it was a great group. And then afterwards, I felt sort of terrible. And I was like, why are you feeling terrible if you just went to a really great support group? And I realized it was backdraft because I hadn't really faced into what's going on for my mom. And there was something about the group that really opened the doors, and the feelings were kind of overwhelming. So, I just did other things for the rest of the day. Didn't force myself to work on stuff around my mom's care on that afternoon. Another thing that can really, interestingly, that can really help when we find we're turning toward pain and it's too much in that moment is, again, mindfulness. But specifically, bringing mindfulness to the soles of your feet. This again is something that's been studied. So, you bring awareness, just join me right now, very briefly, and I want to invite you to consider having this as a practice in your daily life. Bring awareness to the soles of your feet. And if you just kind of move your feet around and feel all the sensations, if you just do that for a few moments, you not even a full minute, but if you do a full minute, that's great. It redirects energy away from the kind of the emotional distress that you may be under, and it just kind of gives a little break. So it's a practice that's used a lot in mindful self-compassion circles as a way to kind of regroup when we experience backdraft. So mindfulness, very powerful and essential in so many different ways. Mindfulness is also, it's not only the foundation of compassion, it's also a really powerful foundation for joy. Because with mindfulness, we get to really see and take in all the good stuff. So it's a beautiful foundational practice for all these good energies. The second of these three qualities of self-compassion is, in Buddhism it's called interconnection, or Thich Nhat Hanh calls it interbeing. In mindful self-compassion, it's called common humanity. We have a tendency, because our thinking minds are producing over and over again this powerful sense of a separate self. We have a tendency to think that we're alone with whatever it is we're struggling with. And we're just not. We're simply not. Whatever we each have, every one of us has challenges right now. We do, because we're human. Whatever it is that each of us is dealing with, there are literally thousands, if not millions, of other people dealing with the same thing. And it's really good for our nervous systems and our brains. So useful to know that and remind ourselves of that. So we think, we believe that we've been given the we've been sold the bill of goods, that things should be good all the time, that things should go well. And that's not how it is here in this realm of existence. There are joys and sorrows. Difficulty is a part of life for everyone. But that's not what the movies and the fairy tales have been teaching us about happily ever after. So we don't always remember that. So we have this kind of vague belief often that things should go well. Whatever we're doing, it should go well. And if it doesn't go well, then something's wrong. And often we feel like something's wrong with me. Like, everyone else here is fine. It's just me. There's something wrong with me. That's a really common belief that we hold in our minds. And this is a pretty big problem, because what that does to the limbic brain. In evolutionary biology, they say a lone monkey is a dead monkey, meaning that mammals needed each other, certainly primates needed each other, continue to need each other in order to survive. And we humans need each other. And so when we're starting to have these beliefs like, oh, what's wrong with me? It's just me. It's only me. I'm uniquely flawed. We're aggravating our nervous systems, making our already difficult problem much harder. So reminding ourselves of our common humanity allows us to just get more in a space of acceptance. And when we're in a space of acceptance, we're more able to kind of creatively respond. This is a poem from Mary Oliver, you may know, Wild Geese. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees and the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things. We all actually belong. We all actually belong. We're all struggling. Reminding our minds of that is so powerful. Okay, so we got mindfulness and we got common humanity. So the third component of self-compassion is self-kindness. It's really self-kindness that is the inspiration for doing these kind of practices at all. Even your willingness to be listening to me talking is like, self-kindness, our practice. And when we're doing self-kindness, it immediately translates into an uplift for anybody we encounter. So it's not only ever, our practice is never only for ourselves. However, we're definitely part of the circle of our own efforts. So it's the urge to help, the sense of friendliness, the supportive attitude, turning all that inward toward ourselves. So I want to lead us in another practice and then say a little bit more about tender and fierce. But just to bring these three components of self-compassion together, this is a practice, again, it's something that you can learn and memorize and habituate. And I recommend that you do that. And the way that I did it was I just kind of wrote down, it takes the three parts of self-compassion, mindfulness, common humanity, and self-kindness, and just gives you three little phrases to say when you're aware that something difficult is arising. And so the way that I did it was I'm going to give you some phrases, offer you some phrases, and that's what I did. I used the ones that are offered here, and I wrote them down, and I just said them every day until one time at work. At the time, I was working as an elementary school music teacher, and I had this moment where the kids were completely like I'd started a folk dance or something with them, and they went completely out of control, and the principal walked in. It was a horrible moment. But the amazing thing was, out of that moment came this self-compassion break. Like just in my own mind, suddenly my mind knew, oh yeah, Eve, this is a moment of difficulty. Difficulty's a life, part of life for everyone. May I hold myself in kindness. So I'm gonna lead you through the whole practice, but that's basically what it is. Three phrases that each one addresses: mindfulness, common humanity, and self-kindness, that you can just kind of say to yourself in moments of difficulty to remind the mind that it has a choice. And it can turn toward you with presence and connection and love rather than with, harshness or criticism or the kinds of other things our minds sometimes do. Okay, so sitting comfortably. Let me see. All right. Think of a situation in your life that's difficult. Something causing you to suffer that you want to approach in a more caring and accepting way. Maybe you're feeling inadequate, or you're really sad about something that's happening in your life, and you'd like some loving, connected presence to help you through. Please choose something in the mild to moderate range when you're first learning the practice, not something overwhelming. Allow yourself to feel your way into the problem, noting any uneasiness you experience in your body. Where do you feel it the most? Make contact with the discomfort in your body. And I just want to say, if you're not noticing where you feel it the most, that's okay too. Numbness is totally fine. And for some of us, just coming up with a difficult situation isn't so easy, and that's fine. You can just, generalize the practice and try it out. See if it's something you want to continue to practice on your own. Okay, make sure your posture is as relaxed as possible. You're going to be saying a series of phrases aloud or silently to yourself, designed to bring in the three components of self-compassion. Although words will be suggested, the goal is to find language that works for you personally. The first phrase is meant to help you be mindfully present with the pain you're experiencing. Try saying to yourself slowly and calmly, "This is a moment of suffering." If this language doesn't feel quite right, see if you can come up with some other way of expressing this message, like, "This is hard or challenging or difficult. I feel stressed," or "I'm really hurting." This is a moment of suffering. This is a moment of difficulty. That's mindfulness, naming the difficulty. The second phrase is designed to remind you of how you're connected to humanity. Try saying to yourself, "Suffering is a part of life." Other options are, "I'm not alone. We all face challenges in our lives." Or, "This is how it feels when a person struggles." And the third phrase calls in the power of love and kindness. I invite you to join me in putting a hand over your heart or any place on your body that feels soothing. Feel the warmth and gentle touch of your hand. And try saying with tenderness, "May I be kind to myself." Other options might be, "May I accept myself as I am?" "May I be understanding and patient with myself?" "I'm here for you." So that's the self-compassion break. And that I read to you from one of Kristen Neff's books. And if you're wanting to hear it recorded, it's on the recording, towards the end of my talk tonight, that's going to be on the website. But if you want to hear Kristen Neff leading this specific practice, you go to her website. I think it's selfcompassion.org, but Kristen Neff, and she has a recording of it. It can support you in learning it and practicing it. Okay, so I want to close. When I'm back here in a couple of weeks, I'll continue this topic because we've just got a few minutes left and I didn't really get to the tender and fierce parts so much. They're both, once you've really kind of sunk in the mindfulness, common humanity and self-kindness of self-compassion, and kind of get that or on board with that, then it's helpful to see that sometimes we want the tender of just like, bringing a lot of love and care, a kind language, soothing touch into ourselves. And that's really a really courageous swimming upstream in this culture, practice that really helps us. Then there are other times where self-compassion, as I mentioned before, looks like protecting ourselves or others, or in context of others, providing for ourselves and motivating ourselves. And these energies can be seen as yin and yang. And I think I'll just say that a very simple practice just to leave you with. I'm kind of rushing, I apologize. As I said, I'll say more in my next talk. But if you're feeling like what you need is tender self-compassion, like that, like if there were somebody who could just give you a hug, but they're not around, then just do that for yourself. You can do the self-compassion break or literally give yourself a hug. It's amazing, but your body releases oxytocin when you do that. The same feel good connective chemical that it releases when someone else hugs you. So just begin to explore that whole that self-care world. However, if you're feeling like you need more of a, you're needing to set a boundary or motivate yourself to get this task done, or provide yourself with something that you need, give yourself courage, whatever. A very simple practice that can help with that is to become aware of your breathing and imagine breathing in white light. And just imagine it as a strong, fierce energy. The word in Pali for energy is virya. And this is one of the practices that has been taught, of imagining bright white light around you or literally breathing it in. And even just a minute of that can help mobilize some of that fierce self-compassion. Okay, that's my talk for tonight. Any last questions or comments before we dedicate the merit? And you can raise your hand or you could put them in the chat. Heather.
Yeah, hi, thank you. I'm the one who wrote the note that I know a lot about MSC.
Yay.
I wear a bracelet. It's one of my grounding thoughts for the day. It's when it says, "What's the kindest thing you can do for yourself right now?"
Wow.
I think that a lot during the day in terms of getting myself grounded. So just sharing
How
that. What's the
did you
kindest thing
get
could I do
that,
for myself
Grace?
right now?
What's the
It's from the Kind Mind Academy out of London. I've taken a lot of classes from them. How to be kind to yourself. What's the kindest thing I can do for myself right now?
Oh, that's so cool. Thank you for sharing that, Heather. I love that. Yeah, I think reminders is so much where it's at. Like we could be fully, we can fully feel that something is true and real, and still, because of our conditioning, forget it in the moment. And so I love that you have that bracelet and then that phrase. That's really wonderful. Thank you. Some nice comments here. Thank you so much. Okay, well, thanks everybody. Let's go ahead and dedicate the merit. May the merit of our practice together be for the benefit of all beings everywhere, including ourselves. May all beings everywhere be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings everywhere know peace and the causes of peace. Thank you. I see some people were still asking questions. I'm going to just put my email address in here if you wanted to ask a question, because I don't have time right now. evedeckermusic@gmail.com. All right. Blessings, everybody. Thanks.
Infinite blessings, Eve. Thank you so much again.
Yeah.
Pleasure, pleasure.
Thank you.
Aloha, thank you.
Thank you.
Be
Good
well,
night.
everybody.
Thank you.
Infinite
Thank
love,
you for a
Eve.
wonderful practical talk. Took lots of notes.
Great.
Thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Steve.
Thank you for the gift of mindfulness,
Oh,
the
my
gift of
pleasure.
self-compassion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.